We are now officially launching this event. Excellencies, dear delegates, dear colleagues, good morning to who has joined us physically here at the International Environment House, and good morning, good afternoon, or good evening to who is now on Webex with us or who will soon will later watch the video of this event. The Geneva Environment Network and the Secretariat of the Convention on the International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, known as CITES, has the pleasure to welcome you today for a briefing on the upcoming World Wildlife Conference, or the 20th meeting of the Conference of the Parties to CITES, which will kick off in Uzbekistan at the end of next month. Madam the Secretary General of the Convention, Ms. Yvonne Higuero, will be chairing this event. And before you are formally welcomed, I would like to share some brief housekeeping rules. I would first like to remind you that the documents presented, the summary, as well as the video of the event, will be made available as usual on the webpage of the event. And the link is being shared in the chat for who is online or is also available on the slides on the screen here in the room. Throughout the event, those of you who are online can raise their questions by using the Q&A tool in the Slido. We have also a dedicated session to answer these. And finally, I also would like to add for who has joined us online that there is the transcript available in over 100 languages. And you can have a look here at the slide that explains how you can access that tool. So moving now to the formal opening of this event, it's our great pleasure to give the floor to Ms. Higuero, the Secretary General of CITES. Ms. Higuero, over to you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Rosolio, and good morning, Excellencies, distinguished delegates and colleagues, both here in Geneva and, of course, joining us online. It is a great pleasure to welcome you to this mission briefing as we prepare for the 20th meeting of the CITES Conference of the Parties, or COP20, that is scheduled to take place from the 24th of November to the 5th of December in Samarkand, Uzbekistan. My warmest thanks to the Geneva Environment Network, or GEN, for hosting us today, and to Switzerland for their continued support of this important initiative serving International Geneva. Originally designed for Geneva-based missions, these briefings have grown into a global platform for wider engagement ahead of COP20. I understand that we have about 400 participants who registered to be listening to us online. So we have definitely grown from just having the missions here to now engaging more widely. Let me begin by expressing our sincere appreciation to the Republic of Uzbekistan for their leadership as host country of COP20. I am especially thankful to you, Your Excellency Ambassador Eldiyor Toshmatov, for joining us today. Excellency, your presence highlights Uzbekistan's leadership in global awareness on wildlife conservation. It is an honor to share the podium with you again, as we did at the World Wildlife Day 2025 celebration in March this year here in Geneva. Now, this will be the first-ever CITES COP held in Central Asia. This is a milestone that reflects the region's global role in global conservation efforts. I really am happy to see many representatives here today of the Central Asia region. We are also deeply grateful to Mr. Matthias Lorscher, here on my left, and Ms. Anna Wong on my right, nominated as chairs of Committees 1 and 2, for their leadership roles at COP20 and for their presence here today with us. Their guidance will be essential in ensuring that the discussions are fruitful and conducted with integrity in accordance with the CITES rules of procedure. In a time when environmental priorities seem to be competing with other pressing global challenges, the role of CITES remains vital. Our convention stands at the nexus of conservation, commerce, and community, where the aim is to ensure that international wildlife trade supports biodiversity rather than undermines it. This year marks 50 years since CITES entered into force. The convention continues to evolve and meet new challenges, reaffirming its relevance in a changing world. CITES contributes directly to addressing the triple planetary crisis: biodiversity loss, climate change, and pollution. The CITES Strategic Vision for 2021 to 2030 promotes legal, traceable, and ecologically sustainable wildlife trade. This vision aligns with the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development and the Kunming-Montréal Global Biodiversity Framework, reinforcing collaboration with partners. The meeting of the Conference of the Parties is the highest decision-making forum of the convention, and it's convened every 3 years to reshape the future of species conservation through trade regulation. It serves as a moment for parties to assess progress, set priorities, and most importantly, take collective action. At COP20, parties will consider 51 proposals to amend Appendices 1 and 2, covering a diversity of species, from okapi and striped hyena to sea cucumbers, songbirds, and ginseng. These decisions will influence how international trade is managed for species whose survival could be compromised by overexploitation and illegal trade. In today's financial landscape, we must find ways to continue implementing the convention effectively. The growing complexity of our work demands both efficiency and innovation. Sustainable financing will be critical for enabling CITES to deliver on its mandate. The budget to be adopted at COP20 will be central to this effort. With 185 parties and over 41,000 species under its mandate, CITES is a testament of global cooperation. The Secretariat remains committed to supporting parties, especially those facing implementation challenges, through technical assistance, capacity building, and policy guidance. As we approach COP20, we must collectively focus on strategic prioritization, practical solutions, and measurable impacts. This requires working together on our common environmental goals. Thank you for joining this briefing. I hope it gives you a flavor of the key issues and priorities ahead and deepens your awareness on how CITES continues to evolve, building a future where people, planet, and nature thrive together. Thank you very much. And now I would like to introduce and hand the floor over to His Excellency Ambassador Toshmatov of Uzbekistan.
Thank you, Madam Secretary General. So, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, as Madam SG told, the CITES COP20 will be held in ancient city of Samarkand, which is a real marvel for Uzbekistan. The upcoming event hosted at the Expo Center of the Silk Road Samarkand Tourist Complex is expected to bring together a huge number of delegates. We expected the numbers to be around 3,500 people from all the 185 member countries of the convention, as well as representatives of international organizations, research institutions, and civil society. The day before the official opening on the 23rd of November, a high-level segment of CITES COP20 will take place under the theme From Policy to Practice, Monitoring, Funding, and Action for Regulated Wildlife Trade. This event will convene ministers from member countries and heads of international organizations. As of today, 20 ministers and representatives from over 10 international organizations have already confirmed their participation. To date, the organization of over 110 site events, including thematic sessions, workshops, and exhibitions, have been finalized. In preparation for the conference, over 400 visa-related documents have already been processed for delegates and participants. I would like to note that visas for all registered participants will be issued free of charge, either at the embassies of Republic of Uzbekistan abroad or upon arrival at the Tashkent International Airport or Samarkand International Airport as well. Information on more than 130 hotels in Samarkand recommended for conference participants have been already published on the official CITES website. I invite all the people who intend to visit Samarkand to go through this website of the CITES. And it will be a great honor for my country to welcome CITES member states, partners, and delegates from all over the world to the historic city of Samarkand, located at the crossroads of the ancient Silk Road. The 3,000-year-old city of Samarkand was once a vibrant center of ancient civilizations, a place where people lived in harmony with nature. Situated in the heart of Eurasian continent, Samarkand offers convenient international travel connections and benefits from Uzbekistan's visa-free regime with nearly 100 countries, ensuring a smooth and welcoming arrival experience for all delegates. During your stay, we warmly invite you to explore Samarkand's rich cultural and historical heritage, its diverse gastronomy, and renowned Uzbek hospitality. And among the city's most visited landmarks are the magnificent Registan Square, Shahi Zinda Complex, and Ulubek Observatory, all recognized worldwide as the symbols of Samarkand's enduring legacy. Today, Samarkand seamlessly blends its ancient heritage with modern architecture and infrastructure. The city offers a wide range of accommodation and conference facilities, while local tour operators stand ready to assist delegates in creating personalized programs, ensuring that every visit is both comfortable and memorable. And for the all detailed information about the event itself, I hope that the CITES colleagues will brief us further, and I invite you all to visit Samarkand and take part actively in upcoming CITES 20 conference. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Excellency, and I can only underline the beauty of the city of Samarkand and the welcoming nature of all of the people there when we have visited to check out the venue and the hotels and everything. And it's going to be a really wonderful place to have this meeting. I think it's going to be a little bit cool. You would recommend that we take a few jackets and with us, right? So just to be everybody be prepared, take a look at the meteorological predictions for that time to be sure that you're prepared. And also don't forget to maybe stay a few more days because there may be opportunities, right, to go visit other places outside of Samarkand. So we know we will have a very successful meeting in Samarkand. Thank you very much. Now I'd like to offer the floor to Mr. Matthias Loescher, who is the nominated chair for Committee 1, to say a few words.
Thank you, Yvonne, for giving me the floor. I would like to echo the thanks expressed by the Secretary General to Uzbekistan for inviting us to have the meeting there. I'm also very honored and thankful for having been chosen to chair the Committee 1. I hope, having looked at the agenda we have to look through, that I will still be thankful after the 2 weeks that we will be working there. So I think one of the main challenges that I will face, and also my colleague, is the sheer amount of documents and topics we have to go through. And it will be my aim, certainly, to give all the topics the time that is needed and to the parties also the possibility to express their views and to reach good conclusions. So that will be one of the main challenges. In Committee 1, we will be mainly dealing with scientific issues, with proposals for putting species in the appendices. And there we have several topics which, having discussed this week and read the documents, will be quite complicated, will be difficult to reach consensus. So I also call upon all parties to be ready, to have read the documents, and to be willing to find compromises. I would like to have as little votes as necessary, but if we don't reach consensus, we will have to do the voting. And that will be something that is something I always appreciate very much in CITES. We reach conclusions and we decide. So I'm really looking forward to these 2 weeks in Uzbekistan, and I'm looking forward to the cold in Uzbekistan. I like the cold, so I'm really thankful to be able to go there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Loescher, and well, you have been chair of the Animals Committee now for a little while, and I think that that experience will help, especially the experience I remember when we had the Animals Committee during the pandemic, that we had to do it online, and you managed, and we were able to get to agreements in that format. So I'm pretty sure we'll be able to get through this too. But indeed, the agenda is enormous, and there's not a lot of time for negotiations. So we always say, do all of your reading, your research way in advance. And if you need to discuss with other parties, please go ahead and discuss with other parties in advance. So, because there's not a lot of time there to engage in those kinds of discussions. So now I will pass the floor to Ms. Anna Wong, who is going to be the chair of Committee 2 for a few words. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary General, for giving me the floor. Good morning, Excellencies and colleagues. I'm Anna from Singapore, and I've worked in CITES Management Authority for more than 10 years. It is truly an honor to be nominated as Chair of Committee 2, which oversees strategic and procedural matters. My committee will also examine, a big load of documents, 87 documents for discussion, and I anticipate productive and meaningful deliberations ahead. So currently in Geneva, I'm receiving comprehensive briefings from the secretariat team, which I'm very thankful on all the matters that will be discussed. Their exceptional preparation and unwavering support has been invaluable in helping me grasp the complexities of these matters. I feel tremendous enthusiasm and confidence about our collective potential. I'm looking forward and excited to working with delegates from across the globe and committed to working diligently to ensure this conference stands out, not merely as another conference, but as a transformative milestone where we all unite to elevate our aspirations and achieve tangible progress. And I'm also looking forward to having fun in Uzbekistan. It's my first time there, so thank you very much.
You will have some.
Yeah, I was just going to say thank you, Ms. Wong, and we will see about the fun when we will have a break, but I'm sure we will have a break to do that. Thank you very much. And indeed, I'm very happy that you've been nominated as chair. Singapore is one, a very dedicated party to the convention. And I know how you have been able to manage working groups and other types, being in the bureau as well of the COP. So you have a lot of experience, and of course for both of the chairs, the secretariat is here to support you and be behind you and everything and help as much as we can. So thank you very much for being willing to do this. And it's also very good, I think, that we have always the diversity, not only in gender, but also in regions that are being chairing these committees. I think this is also very important. Thank you so much. So now I think we're going to start in full with the substantive part of this gathering. And I would like to hand the floor to my colleague, Haruko Okuso, who is the, it is you, right? I thought you looked at me with maybe not you yet. Haruko Okuso, who's the chief of the governing bodies unit of the CITES Secretariat. Ms. Okuso.
Thank you, Secretary General. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to start the presentation of the Secretariat by giving you a little bit about the convention and about the COP for those who are new to CITES. So probably a lot of you are already aware that CITES Convention on International Trade and Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora is a multilateral environmental agreement. So it's an agreement of multiple states. And its objective is to ensure that international trade in specimens of wild animals and plants does not threaten their survival in the wild. The way the convention works is that the species are categorized into three different appendices, each of which are accorded with different levels of regulation. And along with that, there are procedural and process-related mandates that are related to those appendices. The convention was finalized in 1973, and it has been enforced since 1975. So we are celebrating the 50th anniversary of the convention being enforced this year. And at the moment, we have 185 parties, with Turkmenistan being the latest party who has joined the convention. Now, you've probably heard the word conference of the parties under CBD and also maybe the climate change convention. Basically, CITES has an ultimate decision-making body, which is also called the conference of the parties. So this is conference of the parties to CITES. This body meets every 3 years to make decisions related to amendments to the appendices that I talked about just now. Also, they make decisions regarding resolutions, making new resolutions or amend old resolutions. They also decide on the resolution on the triennial budget and the costed work program of the Secretariat. And lastly, it makes decisions on the decisions of the Conference of the Parties. So these are the different mandates that will give guidance to parties, different committees, and the Secretariat on what to do for the next 3 years and onwards. Now, going a little bit about the venue, as you've heard already, that our next meeting is going to be held in Samarkand, Uzbekistan. This is the photograph of the Expo Center. I'm sure at the end of November, it may not look as green as it looks on this photo, but this was how it looked. In numbers, we are expecting somewhere between 2,000 and perhaps 3,500 participants. We have over 120 documents to review, with 51 proposals to amend the appendices. And in these documents contain 345 proposed new decisions, 5 proposed new resolutions. And also we have side events organized either by the secretariat, parties, or observers, and there are over 100 of them. So we have a very packed agenda in the 2 weeks. Now, going in a little bit into the content, actually, of the COP, myself and colleagues will give a little bit of the tasting of some of the highlights that may be of interest to the audience today. First of all, I'd like to draw your attention to some of the earlier documents in the COP agenda on administration and financial matters, especially the agenda of the COP, Doc 2, and working program, Doc 3, are the ones that you may wish to look at to see what are being discussed and on which day and what time. Especially working program Doc 3 in the annex shows a proposed timetable of when certain issues and certain proposals are being discussed. So I would like to draw your attention to that as well. Now, I would like to just highlight 2 different documents from my package of documents. First is on the arrangements for the meetings of the COP. So this is document 7.5, and it really very much deals with looking at the efficiency and effectiveness of the meetings of the CITES governing bodies. It highlights the kind of financial and logistical challenges that the convention has been seeing in recent times, especially what to do when there are no host countries that have proposed to hold our COP. So the Budget and Finance Subcommittee of the Standing Committee has been looking at different ideas, including fundraising innovatively, looking at adding budget lines specifically for the COP host countries, and looking for cost reduction strategies. This document also looks at rising conference costs and funding gaps that exist, which all threaten the Secretariat's services to the parties, which could include maintenance of databases, servicing and providing venues for the different meetings of the governing bodies, providing translation and interpretation into the working languages of the convention, and including providing audio-visual equipment as well as e-voting. And these all impact very much the core functions of the convention. There's a proposal in this document to shift the COP cycle from 3 to 4 years, starting with COP22 and 2032, in order to save costs and improve the intersessional work efficiency. And there are some draft decisions and recommendations that urge parties to consider some of these matters. The second document that I would like to highlight is entitled Enhancing the Work and Efficiency of the Convention Through the Permanent Committees. This document was submitted jointly by the chairs of the Standing Committee, Animals Committee, Plants Committee, and the Finance and Budget Subcommittee of the Standing Committee. And this document actually highlights, first of all, unsustainable growth in tasks and decisions that have really overloaded these committees' work. This has resulted in time constraints with their work, as well as during their meetings. And these have strained both the budget of holding these meetings, but also, more importantly, it has reduced the effectiveness of these committees in making decisions using their time effectively. There are some implementation gaps that have also been identified because many working groups are struggling to complete the mandates within the given time, and also parties are having to juggle so many subject areas and they struggle to keep up with them. The chairs have jointly tried to think about how to tackle these challenges. And one of the proposals is that they will start using a kind of a prioritization matrix to focus the committee's efforts on high impact and core tasks of these committees. But it also calls on the parties to look at draft decision so that these matrices can be refined and improve coordination to safeguard the convention's core mandates. Thank you. And now I would like to pass on the floor.
Thank you very much, Ms. Okuso, for that presentation and talking a little bit about the details of the administration and financial matters, seeing the difficulties that we are having recently with financial issues and being able to complete the work in time. There's some discussion about whether we have to increase the time between the COPs, and that will be up to the parties to take a decision about that, but also to see how we can improve in terms of efficiencies in reducing costs, and because of the situation that we find ourselves in, and you'll hear a little bit more about that from me at the end of the presentations. I would like now to pass the floor to my colleague Thea Carroll, who's going to talk. She is the chief of the science unit in the CITES Secretariat, and she will speak about the proposed amendments to the CITES appendices, species conservation and trade. Thea.
Thank you very much. Secretary General, good morning, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen. As indicated by the Secretary General, I'll reflect on some proposals submitted. As mentioned, 51 proposals were submitted to amend the CITES appendices, Appendix 1 and 2. These proposals were submitted by parties in terms of Article 15 to the Convention. There are 39 proposals on fauna species and 12 proposals relating to flora species, and you can see the breakdown there in terms of terrestrial species, aquatic species, tree species, and other plant proposals that we received. This year, we have at least 13 proposals that relate to endemic species. This is species with a very narrow or restricted geographic range and only found in some countries. I would like to highlight that the Secretariat did do an assessment of the proposals. The Secretariat is instructed to do so in terms of the text of the convention. So we assess the proposals received and we make recommendations. And these recommendations can be found in document 114.1 or a notification to the parties that was published, number 2025/119. Just a brief overview of some of the fauna proposals that were received. You can see it covers a wide diversity of species and different taxonomic groups. We have proposals to include species in Appendix 1. These include, for example, the endemic okapi, striped hyena, mountain adders, and galley wasps. We also have proposals to include species in Appendix 2 to the convention. This includes, for example, Dorcas gazelle, some two-toed sloths, hornbills, geckos, school sharks, gulper sharks, sea cucumbers, and abalone, to mention a few. We also have proposal to transfer species from one appendix to the other, from Appendix 1, 2 to 1, for example. And this includes, for example, the golden-bellied manga bee, vulture species, Galapagos marine and land iguanas, manta rays, and so forth. And there are also proposals to delete species from the appendices, and this includes bontebok and giraffe, as well as one extinct species. In terms of flora proposals, these proposals cover 15 species, with 8 new species proposed for inclusion in the appendices. This includes, for example, the Chilean palm, to be included in Appendix 1, and Commiphora whitey to be included in Appendix 2. I would like to highlight that the 3 proposals to transfer species from Appendix 2 to Appendix 1, and this includes, for example, Brazil wood and some succulent species from South Africa. There are also proposals to address some nomenclature changes, and proposals were received to delete certain tree species from the appendices, and this includes, for example, specific populations of Baduk and Afzelia. On some specific documents that we will be discussing, one of the key documents is the role of CITES in reducing risk of future zoonotic disease emergence. In this regard, intersessionally, there was a lot of work that was done by the different committees. This included also, for example, cooperation between the Secretariat and the Secretariat of the World Organization of Animal Health, collaboration with the Convention on Migratory Species, as well as with CBD, who also adopted the Global Action Plan for Biodiversity and Health. The Standing Committee considered a number of issues, and the Conference of Parties will consider a number of draft decisions relating to this matter. And although no consensus could be reached on a matter of a new resolution on One Health, a party did submit a draft resolution on One Health and CITES for consideration by the parties. On CITES and Forest, we did an interdisciplinary study that also considered the potential scope of an initiative on CITES and Forest. And this report has been made available as part of the documentation. It includes key issues to be addressed going forward, including the review of a CITES Forest compendium that consolidates all decisions relating to tree species in one place, as well as the relevant resolutions. Key consideration in the document will be whether we will continue discussions relating to a potential initiative on CITES and Forests that focus on collaboration and strategic engagement on CITES listed tree species matters, and how we can leverage partnerships and improve data quality. On Brazilwood, for Brasilia Econata, there's a document relating to a study that was undertaken, especially relating to traceability systems, to look at the provenance of Por Brasilia boughs that's used in the musical industry. The report was revised based on inputs received from the Standing Committee, as well as additional information provided by Brazil. And the parties will consider this study, as well as a proposed draft decisions, to further develop voluntary marking and identification systems, as well as mechanisms to register Por Brasilia Econata bow and wood stockpiles. I would like to note that, as I mentioned before, there's a proposal as well on Brazil wood that will be considered. On non-detriment findings, we are very happy to announce that we now have NDF guidance. So it's a finding that must be made by parties to ensure that trade is sustainable. So we have an NDF guidance that was developed through a process guided by a technical advisory group. We had involvement by a lot of parties, the secretariat, the implementing partner, the IUCN, and various individual experts. It includes generic guidance, helping parties to understand what is an NDF with specific principles and concepts, as well as how to make an NDF. So practical considerations in terms of how to undertake this assessment. There are thematic modules covering a range of issues, including birds, reptiles, and tree species, but also a module on how to incorporate local and traditional knowledge in these assessments. Supporting modules were also developed that includes templates that parties can use. And we also developed species-specific NDF guidance, for example, on African lion and queen conch. We've done some field testing, but we encourage parties to, of course, continue to use the guidance. And the draft decisions that the Conference of Parties will consider is how can we improve feedback on the usefulness of these guidance and further strengthen the guidance going forward. An important document is the document on eels. There's also a proposal on eels. The document includes information on the status, management, and conservation of all angulate eels and the levels of or emergence of trends in trade. It also discussed some gaps in the knowledge of certain species, and intersectionally there was consideration whether there's a need to develop a specific resolution on European eels or a resolution on the genus Anguilla. And so the Conference of the Parties will consider a draft resolution on trade, conservation, and management of angulate eels together with some draft decisions. A document was submitted by a party on the conservation of and trade in sea cucumbers, noting that there are two proposals on sea cucumbers also to be discussed. This document covers the more than 20-year history of discussions on sea cucumbers within the convention. It also discussed legal and illegal trade matters and issues around conservation and management, and the Conference of Parties is invited to adopt draft decisions to obtain more information from parties on how they make non-detriment findings and legal acquisition findings for listed sea cucumbers, and to prepare documentation and organize technical workshops to assist parties to better understand the needs in terms of sea cucumbers, in terms of regulation. There are two documents on sharks and rays. The first one is done in terms of the resolution adopted by parties. It gives information on conservation and management of sharks. It reflects on our engagements with regional fisheries management organizations. It includes a study on the apparent mismatch between reported and expected trade in shark species, and also address issues, the need for more specific guidance for CITES listed shark species to support the making of legal acquisition findings. And the COP is invited to consider draft amendments to the resolution on legal acquisition findings and draft decisions on sharks and rays that includes the feasibility of an adapted review of significant trade process and hosting an ENDF tool on the CITES website. The second document was submitted by a party and addressed issues around deep water elasmobranchs. The document includes information on the conservation status, trade and management of deep water elasmobranchs, including threats and management issues, and the COP is invited to adopt decisions to prepare technical documents and organize workshops, including a series of workshops to discuss these matters. And last but not least, medicinal and aromatic plant species, which will also be our theme for the World Wildlife Day next year. There are a number of documents on medicinal and aromatic plant species. I'll focus on agarwood, where there was a substantive amendments made to the resolution on the implementation of the Convention for Agarwood Producing Taxa, and the COP will consider all those amendments together with a proposed glossary to better understand the terminology used in this trade. And a document on trade in medicinal and aromatic plant species that covers a number of issues, including the use of the Medicinal Plant Name Services database and how to cross-reference that database with the CITES databases, information materials on the awareness raising relating to CITES regulations and use of these species have been published on the CITES website. There's a study that has been conducted in terms of the species in trade. And there were further discussions relating to a possible resolution on medicinal and aromatic plant species. And although a draft has been produced, there are decisions put forward to continue consideration of this draft resolution in the next intersessional period. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Carroll. And I have to say it's admirable how you're able to put all of those, take out, you know, really extract what's going to be discussed under these items on scientific matters into this short presentation, because at the end, it's going to be quite a heavy agenda. And I think most of this will be handled by the committee, one chair. All the best to you with that. And especially when there's several proposals on the same species, that's going to be quite a difficult discussion. So those of you who don't get to go to the COP, but try to find ways in which you can get on YouTube and see the streaming, because it is actually quite interesting. One thing is to also congratulate my colleagues who prepared the assessment of the 51 proposals. It's a huge endeavor. And it is very helpful to see, to make sure that the decisions that are taken about whether you need to move from Appendix 2 to Appendix 1 or including a new species in the appendices is something that should be taken with a lot of scientific evidence, the trade evidence that has to be collected. So it's really admirable to be able to prepare this assessment and give the parties as much information as possible so they can take very good and well-informed decisions. Also, as many of you probably know, it's the majority of the species that are on CITES are under Appendix 2, which means that they can be commercially traded as long as it's well regulated and under the permitting system. And it's about 3% that are under Appendix 1 where commercial trade is not allowed. So for those of you who, when we talk about Appendix 1 and Appendix 2, maybe need a better understanding, the majority of the species you're able to trade. It just needs to be regulated. I'm also asked to inform that there's some questions online about recording of the session. This is being, the video will be available on the webpage of the event. And then also about interpretation. There's no interpretation automatically of this meeting, but there is an interpretation button for those of you online on the left side. Let's see, left button option in the screen to be able to click there. There's 100 languages that you can choose from on the page. I hope that for now we've answered some of those questions about procedures of this event. So next, I would like to introduce my colleague, Ms. Sophie Flensburg, who is the chief of the legal unit in the CITES Secretariat and who will speak to us about legal and compliance matters that will be discussed at the COP. Please, Ms. Flensburg.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. My name is Sophie Flensburg. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished delegates here. As just mentioned, my name is Sophie, and I'm currently heading the legal unit in the CITES Secretariat. I'll speak to you about first about a letter of credentials, which I think is quite important. Then I'll give you a few highlights from the agenda of Committee 2 under the headings of CITES and People, Compliance Matters, and Regulation of Trade. And to speak about the rules of procedure first, the letters of credentials. This is established in Rule 5 of the Rules of Procedure, and parties must submit their letters of credentials in order to participate in the decision making. There is, if there are no credentials accepted, there is no voting for these parties that have no credentials. So it is actually really, really important. And as the conference of the parties that we've heard actually makes legally binding decisions by amending the appendices, it is important that the parties, the representatives, have that authority on behalf of their country to make these legally binding decisions. And in CITES, we take this very seriously. The letters of credentials are reviewed by the Credentials Committee, and it's likely that the Credentials Committee will only accept letters that meet the requirements set out in the Rules of Procedure. And these are on the screen here. The letters must be prepared on proper stationery of the signing authority. They must be signed by either the head of state, the head of government, or the Minister of Foreign Affairs, enabling the delegation to represent the party at the meeting, the management, the CITES Management Authority, or the Ministry of Environment or Ministry of Forestry is not sufficient. It must be one of those three authorities there. The head of the delegation, the alternate head, and any advisors should be included on the letter of credentials, so we know that the people that are actually sitting behind the placard of the country are the ones that are mentioned in the letter. If you like to send your letter of credentials in advance to the secretariat so we can check that these requirements are met, you are most welcome to, and I'll show you in a minute who has done so already. And if you don't send it in advance, or in any event, you need to bring the original of the letter of credentials to Samarkand so we have the original. It's not sufficient to have a scan or a photocopy or printout of this letter. It must be the original letter. Until the Credentials Committee has reviewed the letters and recommended whether to accept them, any party can participate in the meeting, but cannot vote if there is a vote. If we move to the next slide, I don't know if it's me to do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go. So by yesterday, 28th of October, these are the countries that have already submitted copies of their letters of credentials, or in some few cases, we actually have the originals already. So if you're not on this list, it's something to take back to your country and make sure that this is done in due course and in time for the meeting. I'll leave it in another minute. So moving to the more substantive parts of the agenda, CITES and People, we have three agenda items that I would like to talk to. Agenda items corresponds to documents. So in other slides, you've seen documents, but it's the same thing. So we're just talking about agenda items because sometimes there can be more than one document under the agenda item. So under CITES and People, I'd speak to those three agenda items. And the first one is consideration of new non-binding guidance on how to consult Indigenous peoples and local communities on proposals to amend the appendices, which is what my colleague Ms. Carroll was just talking about. So in this guidance, there are some practical steps to take for the authorities in order to ensure that the views of the Indigenous people and local communities living with the wildlife are taken into account as proposals are being prepared or being considered ahead of a COP. There's also some proposed next steps on the use of these guidance in draft decisions and how to perhaps bring back experience and practice and possibly improve them. And finally, this document suggests that the Conference of the Parties advice on the terminology, because there are some concerns whether the Indigenous people and local communities is the right terminology to be used, and then the COP is asked to advise on this. Under item 28, which is a document submitted by Zimbabwe, there is a proposal to establish a new subcommittee on people living alongside species of wild fauna and flora included in the CITES appendices, as well as a new voluntary trust fund to finance the work of the subcommittee. And under item 29, there are two documents. One is submitted by the standing committee, so that's the parties collectively, and the other one submitted by Zambia, and they speak to the same issue, which is to recognize 6 strategies that aim to guide and enhance the participation of rural communities in legal and sustainable trade in CITES listed species in the resolution 16.6 on CITES and livelihoods, and to use this guidance to ensure that when there is trade, there is perhaps more benefits trickling down to such communities. And there is also a proposal to develop case studies on the use of certification and labeling systems for products that have involved Indigenous people and local communities and are being traded internationally, and to explore feasibility and identify best practices on this certification and labeling system. So this is future work after the conference of the parties. Moving on to the next items is about compliance matters. So we have a number of documents here. I've only selected 3. The first one is concerning national laws. We have a system, a process in CITES that is to review national legislation called the National Legislation Project. And I'm very proud to announce that at this time, we can welcome 11 additional countries that have adopted, put in place legislation that meets the CITES minimum requirements. And this brings the total up to almost 2/3 of the parties that have adequate legislation, i.e. 119 parties under the 185, which is actually a good track record. As you can see, we have listed here the number of parties for each conference of the parties. And this time we actually have 11 plus a couple of territories. The parties that have adopted appropriate legislation in these intersessional periods and have seen this included in category 1, as we say, when it meets the minimum requirements, are Andorra, Botswana, India, Lao People's Democratic Republic, Maldives, Mozambique, Pakistan, Sierra Leone, Tunisia, Uganda, and Tanzania. Under this agenda item, the Conference of the Parties is also invited to consider short guidance on how to implement the convention in exceptional circumstances, such as war or natural disasters. So it's just a very short guidance that we are proposed to make available to parties that experience such exceptional circumstances. Under item 37, document 37, the Conference of the Parties is invited to agree that penalization of possession of illegally traded specimens should be included as a minimum requirement under this CITES national legislation project to be fully consistent with the text of the convention. Currently, it's not included, but it is included in the text of the convention, and we're just aiming to align the CITES minimum requirements with the convention in this particular document. Finally, item 35, so document 35.1, provides an overview of compliance matters that have been considered by the Standing Committee over the past period, and proposes a small amendment to the resolution on compliance and enforcement to introduce a compliance action plan template. And this is intended to help parties that are facing challenges with implementing the convention and being in full compliance with the convention to actually address these challenges in a orderly and systematic way, structured way, to ensure that they can come into compliance and meet the requirements completely of the convention. So finally, I have a couple of items under regulation of trade. So just to let you know, under my responsibility, I think we have around, I can't tell you, maybe 25, 30 documents. So I just selected a few that I thought was more relevant for this group, but there are many more. So I invite you to go online and find the documents, but the ones I wanted to just mention here concern legal acquisition finding, item 49, document 49, where the Conference of the Parties is invited to consider some updates to the annexes 1 and 3, and we heard under the SHAC document there are some overlapping proposals here that the conference will need to consider. So that's the resolution on legal acquisition finding. There is also a new guidance document on legal acquisition finding for breeding stock of animals that are used in captive breeding facilities, which is based on the same risk assessment approach that is used for other specimens and set out in this resolution. So this is new guidance that hasn't been considered by the Conference of the Parties before. Under item 52, which concerns introduction from the sea, it is proposed that the standing committee, so after the Conference of the Parties, there should be a consideration of whether we need to revise the resolution on introduction from the sea, resolution 14.6, to address some implementation challenges that have been identified over the years, including in a workshop on non-detriment finding for aquatic species that was held last year, and also perhaps have a recognition of the new agreement on biodiversity beyond areas of national jurisdiction that is set to enter into force early next year, and whether this should be recognized in our resolution on introduction from the sea. The next two items, 59 and 64, concerns stockpiles and concerns management and disposal of seized and confiscated specimens. And both of these are important because parties need to have a common understanding of what stockpiles mean and what they mean in the context of the convention. So we have seen parties having stockpiles of seized and confiscated specimens, for instance, rhino horn, saiga horn, pangolin scales, elephant ivory, and timber, not least stockpiles. And it's important that that parties share the understanding of what consists as a stockpile and how is this regulated in the various resolutions under the convention. And similarly with item 64, there are actually three documents under this agenda item addressing how to handle and manage and dispose of confiscated specimens. And this is critical to in the context of the fight against illegal trade, that once you have actually seized an illegally traded specimen, you need to know what to be able to do with this and how is it managed at the national level in order to ensure that it doesn't go back into illegal trade. So there are three documents here, and one of them is also concerning rescue centers and how we handle live animals that have been seized and confiscated. And the final document that I wanted to mention concerns transition periods. So document 105 is intended to come to a common understanding in situations where a shipment has left the country of export before the entry into force of a new listing, but arrives in the country of import after the entry into force. And at present, parties have different practices, which poses some problems, in particular for shipments that take a long time to go from the import, from the exporting party to the importing party. What are the rules? This document discusses various options to align these different practices that are currently out there. I will leave it at that, but if you have any questions on these documents or others, of course, we are available. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Flensburg, and being able also to put this in a compact way, all of the different documents, and choosing some items that are we think that would be the most interesting for the group to listen to. But of course, there's a number of papers that we are not covering during this meeting, so please do go and check the website for all of the documents. I think that these are very important discussions on legal aspects of the convention and compliance. So it will also be a great deal of work for committee too to deal with this, because it has to do with the effective implementation of the convention, and particularly the areas of compliance and how can we assist parties in being able to implement the convention effectively. So these are going to be very interesting discussions as well. So thank you very much for that. I'd like now to pass the floor to my colleague, Ben Janse van Rensburg, who will be discussing enforcement issues and combating illegal wildlife trade. He is the chief of the enforcement unit. Please, Ben.
All right. Thank you very much, Secretary General. And also from my side, good morning to all our permanent missions here in Geneva. Thank you for being here. And also good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone online. It's my pleasure to speak to you on some of the enforcement related matters that will be discussed at COP20. And the first I would like to talk about is document 35.3 on Totoaba. And in this document, the reporting is provided on the implementations of decisions that were adopted at COP19 by the parties that are affected by Totoaba trafficking. There's also reporting in the document on Mexico's implementation of its Compliance Action Plan, or CAP, on Totoaba. And just to note that the implementation of Mexico's CAP will also be discussed at the 79th meeting of the Standing Committee, which is a one-day meeting of the Standing Committee that immediately precedes the COP. And it is expected that the outcomes of the Standing Committee will complement what will be proposed for adoption at COP. Now, back to document 35.3, prepared for COP. It also reports on collaboration through the Trilateral Enforcement Contact Group between China, Mexico, and the United States of America. And it provides information on a study on Vaquita and Totoaba that were commissioned by the CITES Secretariat. Now, in the document, there's a comprehensive set of decisions proposed for adoption at COP20. And the aim of these decisions are to ensure continued strong action being taken against illegal fishing of Totoaba, the trafficking of Totoaba, and the threat it poses to the Vaquita. The next document I would like to talk about is the document on enforcement matters, document 39. And I really encourage you to go and have a good look at this document. Make sure you're familiar with what's in it. And the reason for that is because it addresses a multiple array of matters. This includes addressing corruption, addressing illicit financial flows from wildlife crime, annual illegal trade reports and the CITES illegal trade database, wildlife crime linked to the internet, the task force on illegal trade in specimens of CITES listed tree species, as well as the directory of laboratories that conduct wildlife forensic testing. And still with document 39, if you read the document, you'll see that it has multiple annexes, and each of these annexes addresses one of these issues. In Annex 1, the COP is invited to adopt amendments to Resolution Conf 17.6, REFCOP 19, on prohibiting, preventing, detecting, and countering corruption. In Annex 2, to adopt amendments to Resolution Conf 11.3, REFCOP 19, on compliance and enforcement. In Annex 3, to maintain Decision 19.79 on enforcement, which deals with addressing illicit financial flows from wildlife crime. In Annex 4, to adopt Decision 19.80, REFCOP 20, on annual illegal trade reports. In Annex 5, to adopt decisions on wildlife crime linked to the internet. In Annex 6, to adopt decisions on the task force on illegal trade in specimens of CITES listed tree species, and also the renewed decision 1989, which concerns implementing measures and activities outlined in the task force outcome document. And then the document also proposes the deletion of decisions from COP19 that has been implemented or have been incorporated in the resolutions mentioned. Then I move on to document 16.4, which is a document on the International Consortium on Combating Wildlife Crime, or IQWIC as it is commonly known. For those that may not be aware, IQWIC is a collaborative effort between the CITES Secretariat, Interpol, the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, the World Bank, and the World Customs Organization to support parties and enhance efforts to combat wildlife crime. Now, in this document, the Secretariat report on a broad range of activities conducted under the auspices of IQWIC. It's important also, and stated in the document, that the consortium continues to play a critical role in assisting parties globally to combat wildlife crime using a coordinated and a cohesive approach. Now, the IQWIC Vision 2030 provides the roadmap for the work of the consortium, and it's currently being implemented through the IQWIC 2023 to 2026 Strategic Action Plan. And in this document, the COP is invited to consider draft decisions related to IQWIC, including draft decisions related to the IQWIC upcoming 27 to 2030 Strategic Action Plan. And I just draw your attention to document COP20-15. If you want more information on the activities of IQWIC, you can find the 2024 IQWIC annual report there. The next document is document 40, and in this document, reporting is provided on the implementation of decisions on wildlife crime enforcement support in Western Central Africa. Now, wildlife crime continues to affect parties, and there is a need for continued support. And in this document, the COP is invited to adopt draft decisions that will facilitate such continued support, as well as a decision that will facilitate continued support to parties in Western Central Africa through the IQWIC Consortium. Then there's document 41 on the CITES BCAT Task Force. As you may know, the task force was convened in April 2023, and the task force meeting outcome document comprehensively outlines strategies, measures, and activities to be undertaken by parties to address illegal trade affecting big cats. And in this document, the COP is invited to adopt draft decisions to encourage parties affected by this illegal trade to make every effort to implement the measures and activities that the task force agreed on in its outcome document, and also a decision which will request the Secretariat to follow up and report on implementation to the next Standing Committee meeting. Now, there's actually a number of documents related to big cats that will be discussed at COP. There is also document 45 on cheetahs, document 81 on jaguars, document 77.1 on Asian big cat species, and document 77.2 on Asian big cats in captivity. And we invite you to also look at all those documents closely. The next document is document 84 on rhinos. Now, for each meeting of the conference of the parties in accordance with the resolution on rhinos, a comprehensive report on rhinos is prepared. And this comprehensive report was again prepared for COP20, and you'll find it in the Annex 2 document 84. Please have a look at it. In the document itself, reporting is provided on the national and continental conservation status and trends for African and Asian rhinos, illegal killing of rhinos in Africa and Asia. Also, as an annex to the document, is the outcomes agreed at the CITES Rhinoceros Enforcement Task Force meeting, which was held in May 2025. Further, the document includes a section on parties most affected by illegal trade in rhino horn, identified by the comprehensive study, and you'll see the name of those parties there on the slide. The document also specifically addresses Indonesia, which had a significant decline in its Javan rhinos. And in the document, the COP is invited to maintain decision 18.116, which deals with demand reduction, and also to adopt new proposed draft decisions. Then we move on to pangolins. There's two documents on pangolins. Document 79.1 is a report of the Secretariat on the implementation of the resolution COMF 17.10 REFCOP 19 on conservation of and trade in pangolins. And similar to rhinos, a comprehensive report on pangolins have been prepared for COP20 in accordance with the resolution on pangolins. It's the first time that it's done for a COP, so you'll also find that comprehensive report as an annex to document 79.1. And in the document, the COP is invited to adopt proposed amendments to Resolution COMF 17.10 REFCOP 19, as well as new proposed decisions. Then there's document 79.2, which is a report of the Standing Committee in consultation with the Chair of the Animals Committee and the Secretariat. And this document, among others, provide information on in-situ management and conservation programs for pangolins and on conservation parameters for pangolins that have been developed to date. And in the document, the COP is invited to adopt draft decisions to develop further conservation parameters for all pangolin species. Ladies and gentlemen, and there's also several other documents related to enforcement matters. Document 46 on marine turtles, 47.1 and 47.2 on tortoises and freshwater turtles, 78.1 and 78.2 on great apes, 89 on seahorses and others. Unfortunately, time won't allow to speak on all of those, but please do go to our website and see what's in them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jansen van Rensburg, for that discussion on presentation on documents that are going to be discussed at the COP related to enforcement. And as you are well aware, illegal trade in Appendix 1 species, some of the ones that we have been combating for some time, but not only as CITES Secretariat, but also in collaboration with other organizations that are part of the consortium called IQIC, which is involving Interpol, World Customs Organization, UNODC, and all of those member states of those organizations are implementing many of the decisions of the party. So it's a very important partnership, and we hope to continue with having plenty of partners helping in the implementation of CITES, supporting the parties in implementation of CITES. So there's going to be big discussions and ensuring that some of the actual gains that we have had also over time in terms of combating wildlife crime can continue and even be strengthened. So thanks very much for that. I would like to then pass the floor to my colleague, Cristina Rodina de Carvalho, who is the chief of the Outreach and Projects Unit, and she is going to be speaking about capacity building, ESET and traceability, ESET electronic systems and information technology, just to be say it in full. Thank you, Ms. Rodina de Carvalho.
Thank you very much, Secretary General. So I have very briefly five topics to present to all of you today. And good morning to Excellencies and ladies and gentlemen, first of all, and also everyone who's joining us online in different time zones. So the issues I'm going to cover, those are mostly strategic and they are forward-looking, rather than the number of technical issues that my colleague has just presented to you. So the first one is on the slide is about a capacity building, and I wanted to start by emphasizing here that this is not about the building capacities of CITES parties from scratch. So from the zero, it is about the really strengthening and enhancing the already strong foundation that exists in many CITES parties. So let me begin with the item that looks at a capacity building framework. So this framework is intended to help the improvement in terms of implementation of the convention by bringing greater coordination and coherence in all capacity building activities. However, due to the limited resources and the human resources and time, progress on developing this framework has been slower than hoped. So under this item, the Conference of Parties is invited to consider a few decisions. First of all, Standing Committee is invited to establish the Intersessional Working Group to continue advancing this work. This group would focus on developing a common languages and a clear definition that could make the capacity building efforts more consistent and more effective across parties. The Conference of Parties is also invited to maintain the decisions from the previous COP 19, which encourages parties to share experiences, ideas, and information related to the framework. And finally, subject to the external funding, the Secretariat shall organize a number of technical workshops and consultations that would facilitate the implementation of the decision on the Intersessional Working Group I just mentioned. And finally here, the Secretariat has proposed that the development of this framework where appropriate, could also be aligned with their long-term capacity building strategy of the Kunming-Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework that I'm sure you all of you are aware of it under the Convention on Biological Diversity. Another important item under the capacity building efforts is a compliance assistance program, which is called CAP. It's the second topic in my presentation. So this program and overall helps parties achieve or restore compliance within the convention. It provides tailored country-specific support to help implement the recommendations under made by the Standing Committee or and the Conference of Parties to take the action under specific compliance processes when needed. So the item 21 of the agenda provides an update on the program implementation since the COP19. It highlights the work that has been carried out in eight pilot countries. These are Cambodia, Guinea, the Lao People's Democratic Republic, Nigeria, the Solomon Islands, Suriname, Togo, and Vietnam. The progress achieved under this program since COP19 was made possible thanks to the very generous contribution from European Union, Switzerland, the United Kingdom, and the United States of America. So at this COP, parties are invited to adopt new decision to allow the continuation and the expansion of this program to other eligible parties, subject, of course, to the funding, external funding. And the next slide, so moving forward to the last but not the least component in relation to our also work, the capacity building efforts, which focuses on the CITES tree species program, or in a brief CTSP. So this item, let me just maybe start by saying that the program, the CTSP program links the convention requirements on international trade in tree species with the efforts to improve the forest governance overall. The program's goal is to help tackle the illegal and unsustainable harvesting and trade in CITES listed tree species and reduce deforestation, which is very, very, very important issue nowadays. Since COP19, the program has benefited from the financial support from the European Union and Germany, which has helped parties to strengthen the implementation of the convention for CITES listed tree species, and Secretariat is very grateful for this support. And following the notification that has been issued early in April this year, the Secretariat received 50 project proposals from parties for the new phase of the CTSP program, the project funded by Germany, with the final selection to be announced before forthcoming COP. So very busy finalizing the very, very solid project proposals we have received over the last couple of months. And the proposed decision in the document 23, invite the Secretariat in consultation with the relevant committees to review and report on the program's implementation, as well as a look at explore options to make it as a permanent initiative. Moving to the next topic, which is the electronic systems and information technology and traceability. So very briefly, we call it eCITES. And this is, as I mentioned in the beginning of my speech, a very strategic and forward-looking area of work of the convention. It focuses on the electronic CITES permitting systems, which are the key tools to ensure sustainability, legality, and traceability in trade. What is very important to, I think, to share is moving from paper-based system to electronic systems makes the process more reliable, more transparent, and it also less prone to number of irregularities. So there are two documents under this broad topic. The first document, 56.1, submitted by the Secretariat, proposes draft decisions on the use of standards and guidance, such as the eCITES implementation framework, in eCITES toolkit. It also proposes the adoption of their newly developed guidance on the use of the two-dimensional barcodes in CITES permits and certificates. And the document 56.2 has been submitted by parties, proposes conducting a feasibility study for creating the hub model for the electronic exchange of CITES permit information. So this is similar to their IPCC Phyto Hub for phytosanitary certificates, just an example. And also on the slide, you will see the graph, which showcases the progress that has been made between 2023 and 2025 in implementing the eCITES systems among parties. And we do hope also that the discussions and the decisions taken in the COP20 will help us to advance this work forward. And finally, on the question and the topic related to traceability, there is a document 104, which has been drafted by the Secretariat, and it proposes the draft decisions inviting parties and organizations to provide information to the Secretariat on traceability systems and related resources, develop and use for trade in CITES listed tree species. As well as this document indicates that subject to the external funding, the Secretariat would also consult with the standard setting bodies on the development and use of technical standard and traceability for CITES listed tree species. And finally, And finally, moving to the last, but I think not least topic, which is the United Nations World Wildlife Day. I hope many of you heard of this day. So this day has been proclaimed by the UN General Assembly. It is celebrated every year on 3rd of March. And CITES Secretariat, together with the UN and other partners, is facilitating the observance of the day. The item 24 of the COP reports on the celebration and implementation of various activities of the World Wildlife Day from 2023 to 2025. During this period, CITES Secretariat, with a number of partners, coordinated global celebrations, maintained the official dedicated website and also a social media platform, and run a number of global awareness campaign on thematic topics of the day. And looking ahead, I'm very pleased to share that we do have a theme for the next year, for 2026, which shine and really spotlight on medicinal and aromatic plants. It's a very, very exciting theme. And the theme is called, the full title is Medicinal and Aromatic Plants, Conserving Health, Heritage and Livelihoods. And we would like to warmly invite all parties and partners to start planning your satellite events that will really help us and everyone to raise an importance of medicinal aromatic plants for people and nature and sustainable livelihoods. So start planning, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Rodina de Carvalho, and this is really interesting work and exciting work, I think, under the Outreach and Projects Unit and what's going to be presented at the COP. We're very proud of the capacity building. We have finalized the update of the virtual College of CITES. It's going to be launched at the COP as well. I'm very excited all the time when I hear about eCITES, because I think we need to move into the 21st century as CITES and stop using paper and use electronic systems. So I'm really happy to see so many parties that are now actually implementing it. And finally, of course, with the CTSP, our gratitude to Germany for the contribution, but an area where I think that maybe we don't give as much importance as we should, one of the most economically, financially profitable trade in wildlife is in trees. And unfortunately, with a lot of the overexploitation, we are damaging ecosystems like forests, and it's very important that we assist parties to make sure that they are doing their sustainability assessments and their legal acquisition findings, and knowing that they can trade, but they should trade sustainably. So it's a very important work under CTSP. So finally, it's my turn to speak a little bit about the program of work and budget. And we left it till the end because talking about money, we knew would interest you, and we wanted to make sure you stayed here in the room until then. And also to those who are online, we thought that would be a good idea to start this at the very end. Can I ask the, oh, I can do it, I think. Let's see. So, yes. So I'm going to present some information about what we're going to be presenting, what we have presented already. It's online, the document related to the budget and the program of work. As you know, as I have been mentioning, these have been a bit of difficult times. We know that we have not received the contributions from the parties in accordance with the assessed contributions. We base these voluntary contributions on the assessed contributions calculations from the United Nations Secretariat. We have not been receiving all of the contributions, not only this year, but there's quite a few arrears. The financial situation of the world with inflation, the increasing problems with the exchange rate between the dollar and the Swiss franc have also increased the costs for us to be able to operate a secretariat. And then everything associated with that, from the venues that we have to pay increasing amounts for venues to be able to hold the meetings of the Standing Committee and the Animals and Plants Committees. So a number of things that are affecting us that I've had to take some decisions related to reduce the risk that in the next triennium, when we have a new budget, that we would not be able to meet our obligations, that we would not be able to keep the secretariat able to support the parties as we have been doing in the past. So you will see in the documents that we have distributed, what are some of the decisions that I have taken and some of the things that we have changed in terms of the composition of the secretariat. We've done a restructuring of the secretariat that will start in 2026 to be able to lower those expenses because the standard cost of salaries is increasing for the next triennium. So we have to be able to find a way to address that. And all the other costs that I have been speaking about. So we have now, as we have been able to create the three scenarios that are requested by the parties, which is the first one at the bottom, scenario one, which is this zero nominal growth. And this is basically a copy and paste of what the expenses that we had last year to the next year. So this one would mean that there would be no growth, no taking into account the standard costs of salaries rising, the standard cost of the venues rising, all of, for example, the interpretation, everything that we have to do, everything is rising. It would not take into account that is going to be happening in the next 3 years. So in this, I have said it already in the documents, and I say it here to all of those that are present and those online, that if we go for the zero nominal growth, we will have to make serious changes to the composition of the secretariat because we would not be able to continue with the same number of people under those conditions if there are no changes in the budget. In the next scenario too, which is the zero real growth, there we take into account inflation and a little bit of the rising cost, also the standard cost of salaries for the secretariat. And that one, you see in scenario number two, is 22,420,063. I'm sorry, my eyesight is not the best, over the 3 years, which is more than scenario one. And you'll see the percentages in the next slide. And then finally, what we call the scenario three, which is the incremental scenario, which is normally the proposal of the Secretary General that takes into account the changing situation and the needs of the Secretariat. This time, I try to read the writing on the wall and see how things are going to be progressing in the next 3 years with, again, the arrears that we have in the assessed contributions and how we would be able to manage that. I have proposed a less increase in the budget than would be in the scenario, the zero real growth. You'll be able to see what that means in percentage. Of course, the zero nominal growth has to do with basically copying from one to the other. The percentage difference is because every year there's been a little bit of a rise and we take the average. So there's a tiny bit of a increase for the scenario two, which is the zero real growth that takes into account the real cost of the standard salary costs of the secretariat is included in that, the rising costs that we have to take into account for the venues and for other operational costs of the secretariat, that taking all of that into account, the budget rises by 13.01%. Then in the scenario three for the incremental, as I mentioned, taking into account the changing times, restructuring of the secretariat, looking at what's happening overall in the United Nations, looking at the decreased contributions, that one we have tried to reduce some costs, reduce the size of the secretariat, some of the levels of the secretariat, it now comes to 10.03%. So it's less still than the zero real growth, but it's still an increase. And this is the one that we feel that the secretariat will continue to be able to service the parties in the way that we have been doing in the past. As you know, I have said this over and over in all the speeches, when I open meetings, when I open the standing committee, when I open the COP, that the agenda keeps growing, the number of decisions keeps growing, the program of work keeps growing, but the number of staff stays the same. And we simply will not be able to do more with less. It's now we're going to have to do less with less if this continues in this way, because we simply cannot manage it. So this is how you can see what the difference is. We will be presenting this at the COP, and then the Finance and Budget Subcommittee will be having those discussions to come to an agreement and then present that to the plenary for the final decision and the resolution of the COP related to the budget. Finally, just to show, for example, the situation that we find ourselves in, that we have parties in arrears above $5,000 as of 24th October. Sorry to bring it to light like this, but I think it's important to show how many countries are in arrears, and that we are now really in earnest sending out letters reminding. I know sometimes there's changes in government, that those who were involved before in receiving these invoices may not be receiving them, may not know that they're in arrears. So we're trying to reach out and find out. We would appreciate very much if you do have those changes, if you have not been receiving the invoices, to let us know, and to let us know who the person should be that we send them to. So we need to make sure that we can collect all these arrears. Otherwise, we are going to be in a very serious situation, the secretariat, for the next 3 years. If I have to reduce the number of persons working, as I said, we will not be able to deliver as well. We do have some savings, but the last thing we want to do is to use up all the savings in the next 3 years. And then what happens if further this continues, we do not have anything to fall back on. So we have to be very careful with those savings to make sure that we can still continue to work as before. So thank you for that. I'm sorry to be the bearer of somewhat bad news about the situation, but I think this is something that we all confronting. You have been hearing about UNAIDS that is going on overall in the UN Secretariat. A lot of layoffs, a lot of people who are losing their jobs. We are trying to keep it as best we can within the secretariat. So I would really appreciate the support of the parties, knowing that this secretariat is small and they work hard. They work incessantly all the time to service the parties with the documentation, with all the work that is done to prepare for the meetings, but also intercessionally, technical assistance, the technical workshops that we have, providing advice to the parties. All the team is consistently working and providing support to the parties for the effective implementation of the convention. So I hope you take that into account when you're taking your decisions about the budget of the secretariat. So thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for your support. I hope you take with you some ideas of what's going to happen at the COP, and again, please do review those documents in advance and make sure that everybody's well prepared to take those informed decisions that are necessary to have a program of work and our instructions for the next 3 years, but also your instructions and the instructions to the Standing Committee and to the Animals and Plants Committees. So we have a few questions. Let me ask first the questions here in the room, if there are any, because we have a few questions online. Is there anybody who would like to take the floor and ask a question of the secretariat? Indonesia.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Madam Secretary General, ambassadors and secretariat colleagues. Thank you very much for the very thorough explanation for our preparation for the next COP 20 CITES. Indonesia, we also participated in the meeting. Our colleague from Tashkent has also been involved just to make sure our preparation as well. Actually, regarding the presentation for this morning, I'd like to raise several questions. First is regarding the program. So I just want to know if the Secretariat could indicate which weeks are expected to focus on more on political issues rather than the technical ones. I raising this question is just because our composition of delegation is not only coming from the relevant ministries, the focal point of the CITES, but also from the MOFA. So I just want to make sure that our participation is effective. So perhaps Secretary can also indicate which weeks is more on political issue and which one is more on technical issue. My second question is regarding the 51 proposed amendments to the appendices. Just wondering if the list is still open for adding additional proposed amendments. I just want to make sure that we, the delegation, will not have any surprises during the meeting. That's my second question. My third question, I think from the presentation, we have identified some of important agenda items that should be considered off, but I just want to know if the Secretariat could also identify potentially difficult agenda item that could reach consensus on. And if so, are there any options like side meetings or informal consultation during the meeting? Because we only have like 2 weeks, but we have more than 100 documents, I think, to discuss. So I think it's we have to work very closely on that. And lastly, this is regarding the proposal to amend the Rule 25. I just want to make sure, I just want to learn from Madam Secretary General and Secretariat as well, how the meeting will be, what do you call it, will we be delivered, as we know that it might be very difficult to reach consensus. So I just want to see your views on that. So thank you again, Madam Secretary General. Thank you for your leadership, and Indonesia's look forward to contributing constructively on the COP CITES. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Indonesia, for your questions. I think I'll get started on trying to answer some of those, and then I can hand over to colleagues who would like to add. Firstly, as you know, we have two committees. The two committees are meeting in parallel. So we will be discussing a number of policy issues and regarding, of course, the implementation of the convention and the scientific matters at the same time. It's really difficult. You can look at the work program that's online and see what themes will be discussed on what days, but it's very difficult to say when we don't separate them in that way because the two committee meetings are happening at the same time. On the 51 proposals, the date to submit proposals has long passed. Of course, as far as I understand, a party is able to raise any issue at the meeting that they wish to raise, but I don't think that any of the parties would be in agreement to have a new proposal thrust on them at the last minute in the COP without having had the time to research and investigate it properly. So I think that it's doubtful that there would be any surprises, but again, we can't say no to a party who wishes to raise an issue. But then again, I don't think that, as far as I understand, they can always say that they would like to bring up a new, I think I look at my lawyer, I think they can bring up a new issue, but it doesn't mean that we're obliged to talk about it if it's not accepted by the rest. You might want to add something to that.
Thank you. Yes, issues can be added, but amendment proposals, according to the rules of the convention itself, have to be submitted 150 days ahead of the meeting. So it would not be in accordance with the text of the convention to submit further amendment proposals at this time. Thank you.
So it would only be if they want to raise an issue about something. And as you know, the proposals can be changed during the meeting as well. That can happen, but it would, and maybe the chair of committee, the nominated chair of committee one also wants to add to that, but there is a possibility of some changes, but not a whole new proposal to the meeting. Go ahead.
Yes, according to the rules, it is only possible to reduce the scope of an existing proposal that has been submitted. That's possible. Or the splitting of a proposal in based on what is in that proposal. If you have two species, that there can be splitting, that the two species are being treated separately. That is possible, but not new species. That's not possible to add them.
Thank you, Chair. And do you want to add some? Okay, on that same issue, please.
Thank you. On the issue of decision making, perhaps you may wish to go to the CITES website. We have a COP dedicated website. There's a document that has been prepared by the Secretariat called the Guide to COP20 Decision Making. And that also has some information on how the decisions are made, especially for difficult decisions where it is impossible to reach consensus, what happens next. So that might be interesting for you to see what happens with the CITES COP. Also, with the program, I'd like to just refer to COP20 document 3, which is the working program. And in annex 2 of this document, there's actually a side-by-side timetable of what is being discussed in, what is planned to be discussed in committee 1, what will be planned to be discussed in committee 2. We try to make sure that some of the topics are clustered together and that it's not going to overlap between the two committees. So, in order to make sure that the delegates are in, don't have to run between the two rooms too often. So those are just the two that I'd like to refer you to.
Thank you for that, for adding that. And then on the potential timing about having time to discuss and formal meetings, of course, there's in between lunches, dinners, all of these times that parties get together in the corridors often to speak. But of course, if there's an item that the chair feels that there needs to be further discussion and will require a few days to discuss, there's a setting up of working groups, and those working groups, then those discussions happen, and then a proposal is brought back on how there was some agreement in the room of that working group room on that particular item. So there are opportunities. Again, we can't have many working groups going on. There's just simply no time for that, and they have to be done. Those working groups have to meet when the committees are not meeting, so there's limited time for that as well. So we will try and aim for the limited number of working groups, but again, parties are free to talk to each other at any time in informal settings. There's other ways in which a chair can send out various who are not agreeing on something to say draft something, agree between the three of you what that should look like, and come back to us with that. So there are opportunities for further discussions. On Rule 25, I hand over to my lawyer to be able to say a little bit more about that.
Thank you very much. How much time do you have? Rule 25 is really complicated, and so I can just take you through the main aspects of Rule 25, and otherwise you're welcome to contact me separately, because it is quite technical. Basically, the rule says that there's ideally the conference of the parties adopt amendments by consensus. That's the aim at all decisions that is being made in committee 1 and in committee 2 and in plenary. We work with consensus. However, and this was mentioned by our chair nominee for committee 1, if there is no consensus, there is a way to make decisions, and it's not we suspend the session and come back next year. We make decisions, and that is done by a voting system, and the majority required to pass an amendment is 2/3 of the delegates present in the room and expressing a yes or a no to that proposal. So 2/3 majority of those who are present and voting. Then there are a number of small ways whereby decisions can be made, not just on the proposal that has been presented, but maybe this can be reduced in scope so that it can pass easier. Maybe it can be divided if there is a proposal covering several species or several taxa. Maybe it can be divided into several proposals so that some can pass and some may not pass. That's another option. That's in in Rule 25, paragraph 3. And then there are specific rules when there are overlapping proposals. So proposals that concern maybe some at the same taxa, maybe not fully overlapping, and how that's being handled. And the main rule there is that the proposals that have the least restriction on trade, the least restrictive effect on trade, will be decided upon first. And if that means that the other proposals concerning the same taxa will no longer make any sense, they will not be decided upon. They will be considered as rejected. There is a proposal for a new rule that the Conference of the Party will need to consider in the first plenary session, which concerns this particular situation. And that means that the new rule would require all overlapping proposals to be presented before the committee or the plenary session, it would be the committee one, will move into making a decision. So committee will have all the overlapping proposals in front of it and may be able to see whether there is some parts that could be agreed upon, whereas other parts would not be agreed upon. So this is a new provision that all proposals would be introduced before they will be discussed and decided upon. And the other new idea is that if there are overlapping proposals, but they're not fully overlapping, they're only overlapping for certain taxa, the COP can decide on certain taxa, and then the proposals, the subsequent proposals will not be debated for the taxa that were overlapping, but for any remaining taxa, there could be made a decision. So say that there is a proposal that is for one species, but another proposal is a whole genus, the decision could be made to adopt the first proposal for just one species. And then the second proposal concerning many more species can still be considered, except for the species that has already been considered in the first proposal. This is why I'm saying this is a little bit complicated, but happy to have a more detailed session with any who are interested. So that's the gist of Rule 25. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Flensburg. And of course, if there's any, you can come to us bilaterally if there's further questions about this. But just to say, of course, as I mentioned before, parties should be discussing way in advance of the COP some of the issues that are sticky for them with other parties, especially when it concerns proposals, because that's, you can already come to the meeting with some agreements. I'll mention very proudly that, for example, one thing that we didn't talk about was the Jaguar resolution and the Jaguar decisions. I see several Jaguar range states sitting here in the room, and they have been meeting. They've already had 2 range state meetings, and then they had an online meeting, and to be able to have come to the meeting with the resolution, the draft resolution, as agreed as could be by the range states, as well as the decisions that to be taken in that respect. So that is really going to be helpful that already has happened before the COP, rather than the discussions start at the COP. So this is the kind of work we hope that will happen before, to avoid not being able to reach the entire agenda by the end of the meeting, which we hope will not happen. I think I think there's some questions about logistical aspects in terms of arrangements at the meeting, it's at the place itself, the venue. But just to let you all know that the information to participants will be published in the next few days. So those questions about, seating arrangements and things like that, but the seating arrangements will be always the same as we have had for parties and observers. That doesn't change. But in terms of the general information about the venue and where everything is going to be set up in the conference center will be sent to you in the next few days. I'm just checking to see if there's anything else. The visa, do you want to say something about that? Yes, okay. Ms. Okusu.
Thank you, Secretary General. There has also been some online questions in the chat about the visa process. The visa process for application and checking the status of your visa application are outlined in 3 different notifications to the parties. Number 2025/058. Number 2025/088, and the latest one, 2025/122, that was issued last week on 24th of October. And each of them has different details on how to apply the visas. There are 2 ways to apply the visa, for the visas. One is on visa on arrival, and there is a particular way that you can actually check for your status because it's not an automated system. There is a couple of officers on the other side who are actually making sure that your visa on arrival is going to be secured. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I hope that helps. Again, check online, check on that, check with to make sure that the visa has arrived. But from what I understand, they're coming out fast and furious, and I think everybody's going to be receiving their visas in the next days as long as you have applied for it in advance. So I think that's the last question we had, and we really appreciate your presence here online. To all of you who have been online, I think in the end we had close to 300 participants online and listening to the presentations. Please do, if you have any other questions, let us know. But I think with the information to participants, a lot of that will be answered. All the documents are online now. We will probably have them in all languages very shortly as well. So just have a good trip for those of you coming, and looking forward to seeing you there. And many thanks again to Uzbekistan for hosting this COP, and we look very much forward to seeing everybody, to see Samarkand and the welcome and welcoming hospitality of the Uzbekistan people. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For those who are here in Geneva, just making some publicity for something we are hosting on Sunday at CCG, for those who are attending the Minamata COP. With Brazil and others, we are going to zoom into the Amazon and look at some of the how they are addressing mercury pollution there. It's an event open to all to understand why we have this convention and why we are trying to advance the work there. So join us Sunday at CCG. Thank you.